The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
David Moyler, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, lads.
Liverpool are back.
I don't know. Well, they've put in two fantastic performances in the last two games. They've got City in a week's time. I know they've got Brighton in between, but you know, they're still, you know, 4 points behind and City have a game in hand. So it's gonna, a lot of it's gonna come down to that game against City. If they can beat Manchester City, then they're right back on track. At the moment, it is, look, all signs are positive, you know, from yesterday to rest Sadio Mane and, you know, Roberto Firmino. Obviously brought him on late, but like in the sense of that, and then, you know, they still get the result against the West Ham team. They're in good form, doing really well. So no, all signs are positive and it looks good.
Klopp was unbelievably happy. He could not contain himself in the post-match interview on Sky last night. It was just like, ah, I'm so happy, I need to calm down a little. But he couldn't help himself. He kept trying to, and then talking and talking and talking, and the smile got bigger and bigger. He obviously thinks they're back.
Yeah, of course. But look, like, he was asked after about, you know, what has he changed or what has changed in the last two games in the sense of the last probably 6 weeks. Nothing's probably changed. He did, you know, talk about that they had a lot of conversations. They were talking to, you know, try and resolve the problem. You almost felt it just didn't click in front of the goal. And, you know, obviously with the front three they have, you're kind of expecting them to turn on the, you know, the performances, get the goals, get the assists for one another. It just hasn't happened. And then the last two games, it has seemed to kick into gear. I think the biggest thing for him, yes, they would have been, obviously we know Fabinho's picked up another, you know, a knock. Matip has picked up another one to play, you know, Nate Phillips, who, you know, I've been critical of. You know, he was outstanding. I think that type of game suited him yesterday, that kind of physical encounter against, you know, Antonio, certainly when Suchek pushed on, twin balls in air, but to play him and Henderson in the centre half, you know, and to dominate the game, you know, they looked, you know, relatively comfortable the entire game. They're, all right, West Ham had a couple of half chances earlier on, but, you know, they didn't look like they were going to get in or, you know, either one was going to make mistakes. And then, of course, when you rest Mane and Firmino and you bring in Origi, Shaqiri, etc., and they put in performances and you get the result, you know, it's just, it's exactly what the manager would have wanted, because now, you know, Mane, I know he has a, you know, slight injury, but he's been able to give him and Firmino kind of time to rest, but he's able to, been able to pick up result. And like, it's, I know they've got Brighton before City, but if they can turn over Brighton and going into the City, who, you know, who are on an eight, I think it's eight, they've won in a row now, would be massive. And then that will be certainly the game that will say whether or not Liverpool are going to win this title.
David, it looked like the last couple of games, the Cup against Manchester United and against Spurs last Thursday, that Salah was starting to refind his feet. There was this theory out there that maybe there was just going to be more opportunities for him against United and against Spurs. But I think last night was almost proof that he is back properly. So have you seen any evidence of a change by Klopp or a change from Salah himself to allow this uptick in form over the last couple of days?
No, I don't think, look, I don't think Jurgen would have changed too much. Of course, going into the game, they did switch, you know, formation, kind of playing a diamond, trying to, like he spoke about, trying to get Origi more through the middle. Of course, look, there's no doubting Shaqiri is a wonderful footballer. He has an eye for a pass. He's a lovely left foot. And you speak about Salah. I think it's just confidence. You know, if you look at the first goal he got, in the sense that, you know, against United, he was probably trying that little wiggle and turn inside the box. And like Luke Shaw was man of the match, was outstanding. You know what I mean? He dealt with everything Salah threw at him. In the sense of yesterday, it just showed you that if you do make one slight mistake, if you're not 100% on it as a defender, then Salah will punish you. And, you know, like that goal, of course, it's easy for everyone to say, you know, show him down the line, show him onto his right foot or whatever. But certainly with the type of player he is, when he's, you know, dodging, ducking, diving through, and he's manoeuvring the ball so well, if you do make any slight contact, he's going to hit the deck, especially with them being on penalties. And then, like, you talk about the second goal, that first touch with his right foot is, it's out of this world. It really highlights the fact that he is world class. And for someone who's been, you know, struggling for so long for confidence kind of in goals, he still is top scorer. And now with Vardy and Kane out as well, he could, like, if he was to pick up another 2-3 goals in the next four games, like he's well clear of everyone else. And it just shows you that the fellow will score goals if he's given chances. And, you know, his confidence is right back up now. And going into that City game, it's massive.
It does seem to me that if Manchester City win that game next Sunday, that it could be curtains on the title race. I'd kind of have it at a 9-point gap, David. I'm not sure what you think, especially given how Manchester City performed on Saturday without De Bruyne. Being able to get those really effective 1-0 wins is something that they seem to have in their locker that not many other teams do.
No, definitely. Look, we spoke many times about City, and I've been on here and I've said I always fancied City to come good, and they do look it. If you go back to when they lost against Spurs, they now have won every game in between, which is just unheard of. The thing is, City are like a train. Of course, they're missing De Bruyne, who's their, you know, the catalyst to everything good they do. They've managed to deal without Aguero, but if they can beat Liverpool, then I don't see, you know, anything else other than City winning the Premier League. So Liverpool need to be bang at it. But, you know, of course, if you were to probably listen to anyone, they'll probably say, we've got Brighton first, we need to worry about them.
Can we go back to... Sure. Sorry, I just wanted to ask about the West Ham. That Salah goal that you're talking about, obviously the touch gets all of the credit. I went back and watched it again and again and again. It's about 12, 13 seconds from the ball being headed from the West Ham corner to being in the back of the net. It's that lightning quick, unbelievable. Like, when you're watching the highlights, you're like, oh, they're going to score from a West Ham corner here. This is going to be pretty interesting. And then it's actually something that they were... over the last couple of seasons, it's that dynamism and it's that energy that we actually felt that maybe there'd been an impact from all the high press football over the last couple of seasons. So that isn't the case. They haven't lost energy.
No, definitely not. There's been many people have come out and said maybe it's burnout for the energy they've played with over the last few seasons. But certainly that goal highlighted, you know, the way Liverpool want to play. Any time, you know, they are defending a corner, you always think if they can get the first, you know, the first header. And I think it was Carlton Cole highlighted on Sky Sports last night. If you actually look at Yarmolenko, he's next to Salah, but it's that desire from Salah. And like, he gets across the halfway line, just as kind of Shaqiri's picking up the ball, and he actually holds his run. And Soufal then is caught in kind of no man's land, and it's like, boom, Salah goes. But like, from Trent's pass, you know, Shaqiri's pass, the Salah's touch, and then the finish. It's just, as you said, the only one you probably can't give credit to, and I refuse to give any credit, is Andy Robertson for his header, because I don't think he means to head it where he heads it. But at the same time, he wins his header, and then the passing is just, it's out of this world. It's just phenomenal goal. And I think somebody would probably correct me, but if you remember back to Salah's, I think it was Salah's first season, there was that great clip of a camera through the tunnel looking out. I think they were playing Arsenal, and you can see Salah breaking. It was almost a flashback for me last night when he's taking off. And look, nobody could catch him. And then, you know, the goal, like, it just speaks volumes for him, you know, with the touch with the right foot, to kill it stone dead at that pace. You look at the pass from Shaqiri, the height on it, you know, it was windy, it was raining, and then boom, ball stone dead. And you just, at that moment, you just never expected him to miss.
Do you think Jordan Henderson's going to miss playing centre-back now that they're looking to sign one or two players?
You know what? I won't say critical, but I've never wanted him to play centre-half, and he's certainly surprised me. I was talking to him last night. He said, you're like a prime Baresi there, the way you're playing at the moment. And of course, there's been them comments from James Milner have come out that if you keep playing as well as you were, you know, they might put you as a centre-half. But it's just that he's shown his experience and the way, you know, his knowledge of the game to be able to slot in there, because it's all good and well playing against a good passing side when you're playing centre-half. But for him to be able to deal with, you know, players like Mikel Antonio, like, who is strong, who is physical, who likes to, you know, feel a defender, rustle him and turn him. They certainly dealt with, like, he's dealt with even Harry Kane, if you go back to the Spurs game, you know, who's Lord is one of the best strikers in the world. He's dealt with two different variations of strikers to show that he is capable of playing there. So I have to give my apologies to him anyway.
it's interesting when you talk about the week that Liverpool now face, David, and there's almost a sense of two seasons ago of their approach to this week, that they know that they're chasing Manchester City at this point, but that's sort of the strength of the mentality around Liverpool going in as slight underdogs, assuming they get over Brighton in midweek this Sunday. That should be relatively exciting from a Liverpool standpoint, I'd imagine.
Yeah, of course. It's almost kind of the Brighton games in the way, you know, you're kind of like, if Liverpool weren't to pick up the 3 points, then it would be pressure mounting then for the City game would be totally different. You know, we're kind of all looking forward to this because as much as it was Liverpool United a few weeks ago as 1-2, now City there kind of going, well, hold on, guys, we're 3 points ahead of United, we're 4 points and we've got a game in hand and everything. So Liverpool will be thinking, like, we have to beat them. And they will, like you were talking about the underdog title, that's what they've prided themselves on over the last few seasons. Everybody is, you know, being able to talk about the fantastic football City of playing when they dominated. And then Liverpool have kind of come with this, you know, the style in which Liverpool go with the high press and getting into your faces. You can imagine it'll be exactly that way against Brighton and against City, because they're going to have to take the game to Manchester City. And then without De Bruyne, without Aguero, there's probably no better chance for them to go and be able to, you know, stamp their authority and take the game to them.
Can I just ask one last question about Liverpool before we move on? Again, Klopp afterwards was talking about how in the first half, the midfield in particular were on the wrong side of the ball. And he said that we were playing with two sixes and we moved to play with two tens in the second half. Have they been changing around in game that often? And it's just that we haven't really been talking about it too much, that actually Klopp has been making fairly significant in-game adjustments depending on what's been happening, but they haven't been coming off because they weren't scoring goals. I guess I'm asking, is he always that tactically effective?
I definitely think, sure, he is that tactically, like, knowledgeable and he knows what he's doing. But in a sense, I think the big thing is he moves Thiago from the deep line one, you know, to more advanced as kind of an eight. I know he spoke about a 10, but Thiago still comes deep, so I have to kind of, no, he's kind of playing a box-to-box midfielder because he does get forward, he is dropping deep. But it's just, it's the thing I probably talked about and we've seen. I think the most interesting one I heard was Didi Amand speak about it. But certainly with Gini, gives you that more sense of stability and a sense of, you know, the nitty-gritty. Thiago is a wonderful footballer and now they're being able to get him further forward, which is actually benefiting Liverpool. So you have to give them credit for identifying that. Yes, they spoke about the two sixes, but they almost played yesterday. Everything in the first half was kind of in front of, you know, West Ham. No midfielder tried to kind of get beyond Shaqiri. And certainly with Origi looks to play to feed all the time. He doesn't look to stretch him behind. So like for him, like that's the beauty of managing, you know, being able to identify those things. And even the small thing you said, like a tactical change, like bringing off Milner, bring on Curtis Jones. Like we all saw Milner wasn't happy, but then he identifies why, you know, the manager's made this change, because Curtis Jones is the type of player who can pick a ball up and who can actually move with it and dribble with it. And that came from the opening goal. It was his ability to drive with the ball, pick it up, you know, bring Liverpool 20, 30 yards off the pitch, and then, you know, to play that intricate passing. I think it's where Wijnaldum comes back to him. Then he gives it to Salah, who gets the goal. But certainly there has been small tweaks and changes. I wouldn't say they've been massive. Liverpool have always been that kind of rigid 4-3-3. Certainly, why would you change anything, you know, when you're fresh off winning the Premier League, the Champions League? But it's been able to identify those small things in games that matter. And him moving, you know, Thiago from the six kind of more into the eight and leaving him get more advanced, because, look, the boy's an exceptionally gifted player. But at times you would question his defensive, you know, defensive abilities, certainly his tackling anyway. He seems very rash. He's very quick to go to ground and it can leave, you know, Liverpool exposed. But it's been a tactical, you know, stroke of genius, really, to push him that little bit further forward.
We can talk about the Liverpool versus Manchester City title race. I can already hear Manchester United fans screaming, saying they are 1 point ahead of Liverpool at the moment. The reaction to Saturday night's been interesting, David. Roy Keane and Jamie Carragher in Sky Sports' studio were saying that this was actually a worse result than the Sheffield United one, given the way they approached the game. What do you reckon?
You can see why they'd say it. Of course, you'd be bitterly disappointed with Sheffield United. It's very different when you play a team who are fighting for their lives in a relegation scrap. Certainly with the Arsenal, when they're missing three of their best players, you know, with Saka, Tierney and Aubameyang all out, you know, you're kind of looking, this is our opportunity. And you'd have to agree that I think any Manchester United fan, if they were honest, you know, who watched the game, they kind of, United players almost lack that belief in themselves to kind of go on. It's, you know, there has been, as you said, you know, certain things highlighted that they were at the top of the mountain, they were top, but it's almost they've got cold feet and they've got a little bit nervous. You know, and I think there's probably a lack of you know, a champion mentality in that, you know, changing room, to go on to be the ones that say, like, we are number one now, everyone's coming for us, you know, to have that target on the back. Over the last, you know, couple of seasons, they've always been trying to hunt teams down. You know, they have the winning mentality because they've shown that, you know, getting late goals, you know, in certain games, go on to win it. But it was certainly disappointing in the way that they, you know, against Liverpool, they should have gone on and won that game. And then against Arsenal, you know, the chances they created, certainly someone like a Cavani, you've seen the impact he's had, that he's got to be scoring those. And it was kind of that sense of lack of that they can go and win the, you know, the Premier League. I think that's the biggest concern. But look, they'll bounce back. You know, do I think they'll win the Premier League? No, I don't. I still think, you know, Man City are the one in the driving seat. But you'd expect them to be up, you know, up there.
Just to kind of challenge that a little bit, that idea that they didn't perhaps go for it as much as they could on Saturday night. When McTominay gets injured, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer brings on Anthony Martial. Like, there isn't many more substitutions he could have made at that point that could have been more offensive or more going forward from Solskjaer's perspective. There probably is an element of these attacking pieces just not being in full flowing mode at the moment. That maybe Solskjaer actually deserves a bit of credit for how he did change the game or try to affect the game after that injury.
No, definitely. But what I'm talking about is it's probably a lack of, you know, a lack from the players, kind of, you know, there's only so much a manager can do. The manager's work is done during the week. And then once he picks the team, they cross the white line, they've got to go out and perform. Like, Martial's form would be a concern for me, like, in the sense that he's very hot or he's very cold. Obviously, we've seen the last few games, he hasn't been at the standard that we've seen him. If you look at once football came back at the end of last season, like, he was unstoppable. He needs to find a way to regain that form. But as you said, when McTominay goes off, he drops Pogba deep, he brings Martial and pushes him forward. You know, he showed the signs to the team that I want to go on and win this game. You know, they created enough chances, but there is a lack of belief in there that they can go and win the Premier League. And I think that inevitably will cost them.
That's okay, right? This year, yeah. if like, we didn't really anticipate Manchester United being good enough to be title contenders this year, and if they continue to build, then that would be a big leap forward. But next year, you would hope, if they get into this scenario, that actually they would have that belief because they've been around and they've backed themselves. It's like, I mean, it's hard to say Liverpool didn't have the belief to go and win it the first year that they ran City close, because City set up a record number of points and Liverpool were always behind, but it always looked like City were going to do it. They were unstoppable. It looked, you know, it's not quite a similar scenario, but Liverpool needed to build when Klopp arrived. And this is one of those United seasons where they're legitimately building. We can see players getting significantly better under the head coach, and we can see that there's been a plan in place, and they do have genuine quality in Bruno. So if I'm a Man United fan, I'm having a bit of patience and saying, okay, so let's drive this as far as we can this season, but if we don't win, it's not really that big a deal, is it?
Yeah, but if you're a United fan, you're used to winning. You know, you've won 13 Premier League titles. You know, you're used to having that success, and of course the last few years haven't been great under Mourinho, Van Gaal. Yeah, they've won different trophies here and there, but they've not been winning the Premier League, which is their bread and butter. That's the one that they're used to winning. I think at the start of the season, you'd have certainly said United would have felt that we want to be up there in the top four again, and we want to be, you know, closing that gap between Liverpool and City. Liverpool and City this year at different times have had, you know, bad runs, and United have found themselves in the driving seat. You know, yes, there has been talk about this next year's the big year where we really try and push on and win it. But they found themselves in a situation where they're first, and it's kind of like, yeah, we're only halfway through the season, but they found themselves in the driving seat and they found themselves there. It was almost as if they didn't believe that they, you know, they had become, you know, top of the table, that they could stay and maintain it. But that's the kind of disappointing thing in those big games against the other top six sides, that if you want to be win the Premier League, you have to be beating them. Like, I'm talking even now before Liverpool play Brighton, Liverpool have to beat Manchester City. It's no good them going and Jurgen taking on this defensive mindset and settling for nil-all draw. Liverpool have to beat City. And at times, you know, when Manchester United played, when they went to Liverpool, they needed to beat Liverpool. And then certainly when you look at, I think what's more frustrating with the Arsenal result is it's off the back of the Sheffield United one. If they had you know, turn that around and put in, you know, a winning performance against Arsenal, you wouldn't be looking at the Sheffield United game. But that's the frustrating thing for them. It's kind of, you know, to not score and, you know, to miss the chances they did. It's kind of, that's where I kind of get that lack of belief in them. But at the same time, they can come back and, you know, they will still put pressure on Liverpool and City. But I just feel at the moment, it's going to take them another while to be ready to win that Premier League title.
I just wanted to ask you about Thomas Tuchel's first week at Chelsea, David. This idea of a new manager bounce is interesting, especially from the perspective of the individual players. Someone like Ben Chilwell is not in his good books immediately. Someone like Marcus Alonso is in his good books immediately. What's that like when a new manager comes in and you realise that that manager's made a very quick opinion about you as a player?
I wouldn't say he's made an opinion on Ben Chilwell after, you know, a week. You know, I know they played two games. He'll have a fair idea of what he wants. But at the same time, Ben Chilwell has played, you know, kind of in a back four with Leicester, and then he's gone to Chelsea. It's kind of, Marcus Alonso plays differently in the sense that he, for some reason, he's always, you know, the last few years, certainly under Conte, that he was the one that, you know, would be chipping in with goals and scoring a lot. But when a new manager comes in, if you're one of the manager's favourites, say, before he gets sacked, you do obviously wonder, will I be the same? Will I play as much? Obviously, there was big, big talk about Mason Mount being left out, Reece James. Of course, now Ben Chilwell has been left out. But then you look at it, you know, Azpilicueta is back in. You know, you've got Alonso who comes back and scores. For anyone who's not been in and around the squad under Frank, you know, they get a clean slate and it's up to them to improve and kind of hit the ground running. It is... If you're one of those lads who are out, it's a breath of fresh air because you're kind of wondering where's my Chelsea career going, and then all of a sudden a new manager comes in and he's looking and he's saying like, look, it's a clean slate. I imagine there'll have been conversations with certain lads behind closed doors, kind of like, why weren't you playing? What was going on? And they'll have cleared the airs, and Thomas Tuchel's probably said like, look, you've got a clean slate, and you look at like Marcus Alonso coming in. And certainly probably the biggest one has probably been Callum Hudson-Odoi. He's been, you know, outstanding in the last two games. But then everyone has been quick to highlight, like Reece James has been one of Chelsea's best players since the start of the season. And now he looks like he could be struggling to get into the team. That's what happens when a new manager comes in. You know, he gives the place a lift because everyone, you know, feels it's a new slate, and everyone, like, you can guarantee the first two, three sessions would have been the best training sessions Chelsea have had in the last year, because it's a new manager and everyone's desperate to impress. Everyone's trying to make their mark on him just so that he remembers it, that you're thinking, right, I've got a clean slate. And that's why fellas like Marcus Alonso are back in.
Just some very quick questions about the Ireland situation. Shane Duffy, again, look, people will have seen the highlights, gets caught out for a goal against St Mirren. Celtic now in danger of finishing third in the league. It just hasn't worked out for him. What do you do if you're advising him at the moment, or what can he do to try and get his career back on track?
Do you know what? I was waiting to kind of join you, and I was listening. It is hard. Do you know, I've played with Shane for a long time. I'm good friends with Shane. Do you know, to see him, he's struggling. You know, there's no getting away from that. Do you know, he'd have grown up in Derry wanting to play for Celtic one day, gets that opportunity. It's just not worked out. You know, they're obviously going for 10 in a row. His form, look, it's all over the place. It is tough. All you can advise him is, you know, keep your head down. Make sure everything you're doing off the field, you're doing it right. Everything, you know, make sure that your house is in order at home, everything. And then you just got to knuckle down and keep trying to work through it. I did see the goal, you know, where he gets caught. He turns his back. It is poor defending, to be honest. I can't get away from that. And it's just, that's kind of, for Shane, it's kind of like, that's his bread and butter. You know, that kind of stuff where you're dealing one-on-one, you're uptight against someone. But it just seems that he's massively struggling for confidence. And he's got to find a way to regain it. I don't know how he's going to do it. You've got to just do everything when you go home. You've got to be right. You know, when you're in training, just go back to basics. Just go back to what got you to the level you're at. You know, because he's not a bad defender. He is going through a bad time, but he's not a bad defender. And he's going to be vital for Ireland. I know there's obviously with his form, there's going to be concerns about whether or not he'll play. But for me, he's got to find a way to find his form, because Ireland need him come these games. You know, the World Cup qualifiers are massive, and the importance of the first game, and Shane Duffy will be there, thereabouts, and we'll need him. So whatever you need to do, Shane, you need to do it, and you need to do it quick.
Patrick Bamford, obviously in good goal-scoring form at the moment, is Irish qualified, but has said as recently as October that playing for England was his dream. Should we just give up on this at this point and forget about that and stop talking about him? Or do you make a... Here, listen, come on. What do you do?
You know what, George? The whole English... The lads who are English, you know, and they're kind of humming and hawing, it gets on my nerves. They either want to play for Ireland or they don't. Yes, Bamford would be a great addition to the Ireland squad, but I'm not hanging my hat on him. You know, it's almost disrespectful, in my opinion, to Irish footballers who kind of, you know, there's enough lads out there who'd be desperate and eager to play that you're kind of waiting to see whether or not he wants to play. He's come out and he said he wants to play for England. You know, I would make a phone call and say, do you want to play for Ireland? Yes or no? And if it's a no, then good luck, goodbye. I wish you all the best in your career. I wouldn't be hanging my hat on it, you know. There's enough lads who are desperate. Like, for me, playing for Ireland is the biggest honour of your career, certainly the biggest honour of my career. I don't want fellas playing for my country who are going to be, you know, half-hearted or not committed. He's come out and he said that he's played for England, or he wants to play for England, sorry. You know, what? And then if that doesn't work out and you don't get in, that you can suddenly all of it, you know, say, oh, I'll go play for Ireland, and that's great. And it doesn't work like that, for me anyway. So I have a kind of a strong opinion. If he'd come out in the past and said, you know, I want to play, we've seen certainly with Declan, Jack Grealish, with those scenarios, I still get asked this day about Declan, what do I think about it? And I said, Declan made his decision, fair play to him, good luck. Goodbye. I wish you all the best. I'm friendly with Declan. No problem with that. He made his decision. Go and do it. Go on and play with England. But it's just this whole thing of, we don't want to be chasing fellas and looking over. You know, I think we need to take a bit more pride in ourselves that we, you know, of course, look, the goals have been a problem. But we can't be resting our hat on a lad whether or not he wants to play for Ireland. You know, I think we've got more about us than that.
I think you're dead right. David, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.
David Moller giving us some thoughts there. We'd love to hear from you too. 0879 180 180 is the mobile number. You can WhatsApp us on that. And if you want to, you can always leave a comment on the YouTube channel, or you can tweet us at OffTheBallAM. It's 9 minutes past eight this morning.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.